And good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King. Thanks for joining us here this morning. And we're here once again with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, to take your financial questions. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning.
How's it going? Good
morning. Am I on? I can't hear me.
You are on.
Oh, whoa.
How about that?
Woo! I got it now. Folks, my hair is sticking up like I just hit a Tesla capacitor here.
Some of those headphone jacks, you have to really crank them up in order to hear anything. But we are here and we are live today.
And we're here live on 2814. I have to make sure I say that for compliance purposes.
All right, give us a call, 715-845-2155. The market, after taking some hits earlier in the week, up on Friday, and there are some that are suggesting that if there was a correction, it's already over.
You know, there's a lot of information in there. In fact, there is an article that pops out from Bank of America's Michael Hartnett, at least I believe how you'd say it, saying that the stock market correction is over. Flows show capitulation of BNAs. Well,
tell us what that means. BNA
heartless. Capitulation is, you know, it's like this Italian term. It's like capiche, capitulation.
It's for surrender.
How you doing? You know, that kind of stuff. Well,
give
for the up. Rest of us, give up. Get the heck out of here. You know what I mean? Capitulation is when the people finally say, or people finally say, I've had enough. I'm going to sell out of the marketplace. I'm going to get out of stocks. I'm going to start going into, for in this example, I'm going to start going to U.S. Treasury bills. When that begins to occur and money starts flowing out of the stock market, that starts, it usually is the case when you start seeing the large money starting to come back in. Institutions, pension funds, et cetera, start putting the money back into the marketplace and usually starts driving the market forward. So inside of their article, they're showing charts on the inside of here, and I think it's a pretty good one to look if you're looking at this, folks. They're taking a look at more emerging markets, which emerging markets have been slammed over the course of about the last 6 weeks versus just here the last, 6, 8 weeks probably. They started before the rest of the Dow. And in there, they're showing clearly that the money has been leaving the emerging markets and saying signs that the money should be going in. Inside of the article, Michael Hartnett, or Heartless, however you want to say that, is saying that the Dow is looking at about the same place, and they say that they still have a little bit of work to go before they start buying in, but they think that the capitulation has happened, and it's time to start going into the stock market. Of course, folks, we're not recommending that you do or don't, but please take a look at the article on the inside.
Now, technically, this wasn't a correction, because there are definite terms for a correction, and normally it is when defined as when the market drops 10% from the peak. Mm-hmm. And the market, the Dow Jones Industrial, was down 7.5% below its all-time high, while the S&P 500 was 6.1% below that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the sell-off, according to this, was sharp enough to remind investors that corrections are inevitable. And we've talked about that many times on the show, that they're going to happen.
You know, we've talked about a couple of different things with that. You know, first of all, I think a correction certainly started. Do I call this a mini correction? Correction-like? Yeah, perhaps I do. I think what happened is we had so much going on inside of the media, inside of the news, saying that there's going to be a correction that's going to happen, the world's going to fall apart, the marketplace is going to drop down to nothing, the bubble's going to burst, we're all going to be running through the streets naked with a toga. Well, I suppose it wouldn't be naked if you have a toga on, but it'd be cold in this weather. Nonetheless, I think we all agree upon that, Tom. So we go, you know, running in the streets, the whole world's falling apart, and I think there was enough negative information to kind of tweak the bubble a little bit, tweak the balloon, let a little bit of air out, if you will. And I think that's what happened here. Because what it comes down to, when you start looking at the economic data, aside from really the cold-adjusted durable goods report, cold-adjusted GDP here for December, January, if we take a look at that, the economy is still doing okay. I might even say getting close to good. Still okay in my book, but getting close to good. And I think the marketplace kind of said, hey, we got the ability to have a bunch of stuff on sale. Let's start buying. We certainly saw that over the course of the last few days. I think most people forgot about the 300 and some point drop on Monday because we pretty much made it back by the end of the week.
Now, it's suggested here that even though there was some recovery and that some people are saying the correction is over, there are others who believe that it is still ongoing. And what you do in that situation is you try to find some stocks that are sort of or some companies that are sort of resistant to corrections like that. And get away from what they call the high-flying stocks. They say Wall Street has a name for them, quality stocks. I mean, that's pretty generic, but they give a list of some examples of the quality stocks that at least this company is moving money towards. And it's places like Allstate Insurance, Aflac, a couple of banks, Wells Fargo and the Royal Bank of Canada, Cisco Systems, Apple, AT&T, Chevron, things like that. Good idea?
A fantastic idea. We've talked about it in this program time and time again, and here's just a, we take a look at the last month and a half or so, it's just a perfect microcosm of where we have to say you have to make sure you're diversified inside of a portfolio. You know, it's happened so many times, I can't even put a number on it over the course of the last couple of months, where clients would come in and say, well, geez, you know, my portfolio is doing great. Let's take some more money that we have and put it in the marketplace, and let's get the money that we have over here in this safety stuff, Merle, let's get it back in the market because it's making so much more. And then here's where we have to, well, we have a stapler is what we use. We kind of staple their hands into the, you know, the ground for a little bit of pain to have them remember that they have to keep stuff, you know, grounded and that type of stuff, and a little waterboarding. But we get them back into the place remembering that they have to diversify because the markets will fluctuate. Markets will change. And this past couple of months is the perfect reason that we have to have portfolios diversified. We have to make sure we have the small cap and the mid cap and the large cap and the international and the growth and the value and the bonds or the bond likes as of late. But we have to have that because it's the combination of all of it that helps us get the best rate of return and the least amount of volatility down as we possibly can, at least. Nothing, of course, is ever guaranteed, but that diversification we need to have. So what happens then is if we're in individual stocks, where most people tend to gravitate towards are to those that go the highest. You know, for example, I've had so many requests for people wanting to buy Tesla Motors. Why? Because it was up, you know, some 300% this past year, so everybody wants to buy Tesla Motors. Not thinking that, okay, if you're going to buy Tesla, what are you going to buy to help have some diversification around it, simply because that might be a high flyer. So in this article by, again, Mark Hulbert, who is a person we talk about quite a bit on this program, Tom, goes through and talks about defensive stocks. So we take a look at the defensive stocks on the inside, and they have this whole history, our whole list in here, and how they quantify and come down to these stocks. And I recommend it. It's actually quite a good article, folks. If we take a look at it, well, let me go ahead and make sure we put this in here. It's called 10 Quality Stocks That Beat a Declining Marketplace. Mark Hulbert, February 7, 14 is the opinion piece. But if we take a look at just a quick examination of the stocks they put in here, it includes insurance companies, Aflac and Allstate. Why are they in there? Because they consistently make profit. Insurance companies tend to make money whether the market's either up or down. Why? Because we have to buy the insurance. Do we have to have car insurance? Yes. And Aflac does one heck of a job of having money come from payroll deductions. So as a result, it works out well. Do banks make money? Banks make money, it seems, whether the market is up or down. But if we look at the banks on the inside, three of the banks that they have listed are all Canadian banks. What's the thing about Canadian banks versus U.S.? They're much more conservative. They have to have a minimum debt, a minimum of equity to the debt ratio that's much higher than what the U.S. is. So in that, do they make money? The answer is yes. Apple was not on the list until just recently, and the reason that Apple came into the list is because they brought themselves into such a high financial position that they had that ability to hold out. And Cisco Systems, which is next, Cisco Systems is really one of the reasons that the Internet, our telephones and so forth, and all the switching and capabilities happen in the country so well because they do such a great job and manufacture that sort of information and data. AT&T, of course, phones. We have in there and Chevron, which, of course, oil. And we have, of course, IBM. So the consistency with all of these is consistent profit and consistent goods and services of things that we use and need on a daily basis. Across the board, and conservatism. So just like anything else, it makes perfectly good sense that's in there. Other well-known stocks that are mentioned inside of the article, Walt Disney, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble. And again, just make sure you put the disclosure out there. I'm not telling you to run out and buy these folks, but this is a great article. It tells you some reasons why some of these may be some good defensive portfolio or stocks for you.
Well, something tells me that if people are not investing in mutual funds and are investing in individual companies, many of these are going to be on almost anybody's portfolio list to want to have.
You know, if you're buying a mutual fund, let's say we, you know, folks, there's nothing wrong with a stock account versus a mutual fund account. There's not one that's better or worse than another. You just have to do them right. And I can quantify that again. But further, if we say that, if you're going to buy a high-quality, large-cap growth mutual fund, you're probably going to find almost all of these names in it. Why?
Yeah.
Because the portfolio managers of the mutual funds recognize that if you're going to go for high-quality, good, producing, dividend-producing stocks, these are going to be the names that are inside of it. The difference is that with $1,000, you can buy all of these stock names in a good-quality mutual fund, versus if you want to buy all of these with $1,000 on your own, you're never going to be able to do it reasonably.
715-845-2155. We'll take a quick break, come back with more. We're talking to Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Back after this on WSAU.
Okay, everyone, Valentine's Day is next week. If you're looking for a sure way to show that special someone in your life just how much they're loved, check this out. My wife's favorite Valentine's treat is chocolatey-dipped strawberries, and I got major kudos last year by giving her the most delectable dipped berries she's ever tasted. They're from Sherry's Berries, and let me tell you, these berries are huge and perfectly ripe and juicy. They come freshly dipped in dark, white, and milk chocolatey deliciousness, and covered in awesome gourmet toppings like chocolate chips and chopped nuts. Your sweetheart will love these berries. Plus, listen to this. Right now, you can get these mouthwatering berries starting at $19.99. Plus, order today and you can get double the berries for just $10 more. But don't wait, because Valentine's Day is next week and this offer expires this Friday. The only way to get this fantastic deal is to go to berries.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use my secret code 2929. That's berries.com, secret code 2929.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me, whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
There are so many places to get news like this.
Justin Bieber charged with assault in Canada.
Wow, winning.
But there's only one place that makes sense of it all. And how it affects you.
Give America a race.
Apparently going to be a significant storm.
Whether it's news like this.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is a just remarkable talent.
Or news like this.
Serious chemical weapons is not a game.
This.
It's real. It's important.
On WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, taking your phone calls and questions, 715-845-2155. Before we leave the discussion of what we were talking about and some of the money leaving various parts of the market and going into Treasury bonds.
Capitulation.
There's another column talking about how you cannot be afraid to invest in what scares you, and they use emerging markets and bonds as an example. These days where money is escaping certain areas, just because you don't like a certain sector or are afraid of a certain sector doesn't mean that you ignore it completely, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the old measure or humor in our industry, and every industry has a, I can't think, there's probably some sort of a better word for it, I can't think of it, is that when the small investor, which means Tom, you know, well, Dave here, a new rep here in our office, folks. Mr. Dave Mix is sitting in, laughing his can off, listening to us. So he's there. Well, Dave and I are small investors. We know that your billions is different.
Well, if you're a small investor, then that makes me a guppy. I don't. It makes me sound a minnow in the grand scheme of things. But go ahead.
When the small investor starts getting out of the market, it's time to get in. So when you start looking at the marketplace, and we had talked about the article from Bank of America, Harnett. Michael Harnett before, is that when the small investor starts getting out of the marketplace, that means they're finally afraid. And the opposite side is when the small investor starts getting in, that's time when you start getting out. And it goes back to this thing, is there such a fear gauge? In fact, they actually have a fear gauge out now called the VIX index, which is the measurement of fear. There's such a fear that goes in the marketplace that when people get afraid, you start getting out, and that's when the smart money gets in. I've used this example before, but going back in 2008 on I believe it was October 12th when the market went down 1,000 points. I may be off a day or two, but I'm pretty close. When that stock market dropped 1,000 points, the next morning I had two of my clients call me and said, Merle, it's time to start investing. Not only did they have investments prepared, they knew what they were going to buy, and they had cash sitting on the sideline to do it. And interestingly enough, they're both of my largest clients. Now, I'm not talking about girth such as myself. By the way, pear is a shape, so I am in shape. Therefore, but they're the clients who come through and said, yep, we've got cash sitting on the sideline. Let's start buying. And they on that have made boatloads of money. And when they see the stock market go down, such as Monday, they don't panic and say, Merle, what do we do? We're going to sell. They say, Merle, I've got a couple of ideas. Why don't we buy a few of these? And so it's that mentality. They've got that other mentality that says, okay, and I've used this and said this for a long time too. Usually what you think is the wrong decision, do the opposite, such as, oh, my God, everything's falling apart. I want to sell. That's probably wrong because it's probably the time you want to look around and say, well, can we put a couple more bucks in? Can we do something differently? And that's the time to do so. Or, geez, the market is doing fantastic. We're making so much money right now. That might be the time you say, well, do we want to take a couple of shekels off the table, maybe do a vacation or something of that nature? So it's usually the opposite side. And so those things that you fear then are the things that you may want to actually buy into. Now, Emerging markets and bonds have been the tough part, but here's the thing you have to know. And I got a text message this morning and was texting with somebody asking me about bonds right now. Are bonds good? Are bonds going to fall apart? You know, what do we do about bonds? I'm sort of getting this information. So, yes, I'm working. Other than my beautiful good looks, waking up in the morning and my hair sticking up and getting ready for the show, I was actually doing calls and texts and emails this morning. So with that, we have to make sure we know what we're doing a little bit, because emerging markets just isn't some term that's out there. We have to understand what emerging markets are, I recommend. Emerging markets are usually international small countries and companies within those small countries that are popping up and coming up with new businesses, ideas, et cetera, et cetera. And so the emerging markets industry can be enormously volatile. And we use them every day in all of our clients. We might have some, you know, 70, 80-year-old clients going, what, we have emerging markets? Yeah, but it's usually about 5% of a portfolio or something very small. But they make a huge difference when they go up. And when they come down, of course, they can make a big difference coming down, but they're usually going up and then still do nothing, go up and do nothing. Every once in a while, they come crashing back. Now, bonds are good, and let me chat about bonds here for a minute. You know, bond prices have been so high, folks, for such a long time, and it hasn't been until these past few months that we've been plucking a few bonds for prices out. Now, for example, if you've listened to this program for a while, one of my favorite investments for clients that are retired, especially for creating income, is the municipal bond. I love using municipal bonds. They're not a fit for everybody, but when I do, not only are they personally fun for me to trade, I think they're kind of fun and trade and looking for them, but I can get the interest and the principal insured by a reinsurance company that will reinsure the municipality. So if you buy, for example, and I'm just throwing a number out there, a $25,000 bond, we can have the interest and the principal insured by the reinsurance. And there's several different reinsurance companies that are out there. So I like that idea because I like it when clients are getting money. I like to have it guaranteed if I can. I want that income stream to make sure it's there. Even if the stock market falls apart or something falls apart, I want to make sure that when you're 95 years old, you don't have to move in with your son-in-law, gentlemen. You know what I mean? There's been a couple of studies out there that said, would you rather run out of money or would you rather end it all or move in with your son-in-law? And most guys would say, I'm going to end it all. I'm not moving in with my son-in-law. But that was an attempt at humor there, Tom. You're looking at me kind of funny.
Okay.
Anyway, I want to try to make that stuff done. But the problem is that when interest rates went down, the bond prices went up. When the uncertainty happened inside of the marketplace throughout the course of 2008, 2009, of course, 10 and 12 were in there, too, in the uncertainty of the stock market. Money left the stock market, went into the bond price, and forced the bond prices up even higher. So if you think about a bond price in the form of a percentage, say 100% would be what's called par value. We're seeing many bonds 6 months ago at 115, 117, 120% of par, or that 100%. The problem with that is that the maturity value of a bond, and if you buy it in a secondary market, you can buy them wherever you want to, 1, 3, 5, 10, 20 years down the road. At the maturity value of that bond, you're only going to get the 100% or the par. So if you bought it at 120%, you're only going to get the 100. Well, why buy it?
Yeah.
And so what we found happen, and God bless Detroit for this, because Detroit deflated a lot of those bond prices. It took those municipal bonds and dropped the bond prices down. We saw a little bit of the same thing happen inside of the corporate bond arena. So when those prices came down and dropped down, we started looking around saying, hey, we think we can pluck out a couple of municipal bonds around here. We have. Not often, but we're finding a municipal bond we can pop up. Puerto Rico having some financing problems, some problems down there. They've deflated that bond price a little bit. But, you know what, we bought some real high quality, what's called revenue-based Texas bonds recently for about 104. You know, 104%. Well, 4%, if it's, the yield is enough on the bond, you can make it work. But the bond marketplace, you have to watch, because the individual bonds are good, but the bond mutual funds right now are bad. What's the difference in that? And I'll just, let me say, go there and trying to understand again some of these different things that are out there that you're fearful of. People have not been buying bonds because you're hearing on the news. Interest rates are going to go up. Bond prices are going to come down. Will that happen? The answer is yes. When? I don't know. If I had that, I'd have like aluminum foil and antennas on my head, and I'd be really smart.
Mm-hmm.
But the individual bonds I'm liking right now, individual bonds, I can hold till that maturity date. Again, 1, 3, 5, whenever we want it to be. I can hold it till that maturity date. I know that, especially if it's a municipal bond and I have it insured, I'm going to get that principal back more times than not, of course. Odds are pretty high, but I'm going to get that principal back. I'm going to get my original par value, that 100% dollar, I'm going to get that back. I can't do that with a mutual fund. So with a mutual fund, if the interest rates go up and the bond value comes down, or the value of that mutual fund bond comes down, I just got a loss.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do anything about it. I just lost money. But if I hold the physical bond, I can wait till the maturity value. I don't care what happens with interest rates here along the way over the course of the next 3 or 5 years. So it works great from an income value. It all became a price issue. So in understanding those things that we're fearful of, emerging markets, scary, yes. Beat up, yep. Good time to buy, probably. So if that's a part of your portfolio, take a look at them. But understand that they're small company, small country, international funds in almost all areas. And you need to know that part. And bonds right now, which is another part of the article, interest rates actually went down a little bit inside of January because of the amount of money running inside of the bond marketplace. And it did it because of the stock market. I think it's short-lived, but it actually happened throughout the course of January. So bonds, I think the prices are coming in for us to pluck into fine municipal bonds where we can get a nice yield and still get a nice price on them as well. So be mindful. When you're fearful, that's the thing you have to look at because it's on sale, and nobody likes buying stuff on full price.
All right, 715-845-2155. We're going to take a break for some news. We'll come back with more. You're listening to Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch on WSAU.
Over the past 50 years, SCORE mentors have helped more than 10 million small business owners succeed for free.
Starting a business can be incredibly confusing.
SCORE really helped me steer the course.
Whatever the business, there's a SCORE mentor that has the experience and know-how to help you reach your goals.
SCORE mentors are serious business experts.
Whether you're a startup or an existing business, SCORE can provide the perspective and advice that ensures success.
My SCORE mentor has been tremendously helpful in the marketing of my business.
SCORE is a nonprofit organization where we provide free business consulting services to people who want to start a business or already in business.
Are you starting or growing a business? Be one of the next 10 million small businesses helped for free by SCORE. Get your free business mentor at score.org.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. A massive farm bill is in the books. President Obama signed the measure yesterday during an appearance at Michigan State University. The nearly $1 trillion bill funds agricultural programs for 5 years. It reforms subsidies and cuts about $8 billion from federal food stamp programs. The farm bill was hung up in Congress for a couple of years over disputes about subsidies, dairy pricing, crop insurance, and the food stamp program. Rothschild is the latest municipality to put out a water running order to residents, but not all residents. Public Works Director Tim Vergara says it's a version of the run order, much like Weston put out.
It's not a village-wide run order at this point right now. Right now we're being particular in where we're selecting the residents to run their water based on what we're finding.
They're being notified with placards placed on their houses to keep the water running somewhere inside their house in order to prevent pipes from freezing in the ground. Public Works Director Vergara says the reason for the selected orders is differences in construction materials. In sports, the Badger hockey team beat Minnesota last night 2-1 to sweep that two-game series. The Badger women shut out Ohio State 3-0. The Pointer men's hockey team beat Stout last night. They'll play again tonight. And the Brewers announced the signing of free agent pitcher Francisco Rodriguez. The Bucks back in action tonight. They host the Houston Rockets. And the Olympic Games continue. The opening ceremonies yesterday, and the Olympic women's hockey team won their first matchup earlier today, beating Finland 3-1. The Newsline 9 weather forecast. We're looking for a chance of light snow, mainly south of Highway 29, and a high going up to 14. For tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low down to 11 below zero. Sunday, partly cloudy with a high of 11 above. Then Monday, look for mostly sunny conditions, a high of 5 above. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high getting up to 10 above. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
It's Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight? A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Honey, get up. You're going to miss the bus.
There's no school today.
Nice try, Buster, but get your butt in gear.
Get the latest on school closings as soon as they're announced.
Seriously, there's, like, no school today.
Online on WSAU and WSAU.com.
I checked their website, sweetie. There is school today.
Much to the chagrin of kids everywhere.
Oh, stupid radio station. Move it!
WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau.
Folks, the opinions voiced on this show are for general information only, not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements which may not come true. Securities investment advisory services offered through HVAC Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC. HVAC Incorporated and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. And, folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
You know, we were talking about fear in the marketplace, and one of the great investors, of course, is Warren Buffett. Berkshire Hathaway did take a hit earlier this week when the market went down. Their shares dropped quite a bit. But Warren Buffett's famous line is that he doesn't like to invest in things that he doesn't understand.
Yep.
I would imagine part of that is fear as well. But when you take that stance, even if you're Warren Buffett, you're going to miss out on opportunities because there are a lot of things out there that we don't understand that can be very profitable. How do you avoid that? Or if you're going to be afraid of things that you don't understand or stay away from things you don't understand, how do you avoid, you know, discovering the next Apple or discovering the next Google or discovering the next whatever the case may be?
I think you have to be a constant learner, in my opinion. I believe that throughout the course of life. You have to be a constant learner. You have to continually read and know what's going on and different things. And if you're not familiar with it, you have to understand it. For example, Bitcoin right now. I got the general concept, but, folks, I'm not putting any money inside of my Bitcoin account because I still don't fully understand how it goes, but I keep reading articles, reading information, and hopping into Wikipedia. Actually, has some stuff about it because I need to understand it because I think maybe not Bitcoin, but something else is going to be an electronic global currency at some point in time. I can foresee that coming.
Some guy in Wisconsin just got scammed in the last week or two. Lost $150,000 in Bitcoin. Now, I'm not sure how that would work, but not good for him.
When there's no controls, there's no regulation. And I'm not a fan of regulation, but there's got to be something that has a control and teeth to control it, and that's part of the issue. So again, it's one of those things I know I need to know, and so I want to learn about that. But you have to know what you're investing in, I guess, is the real point of it. So many people will buy a stock, and folks, I did it too, and this is where I come through with this. I bought some stock in a broadband company. I didn't know what a broadband was. You know, I had no clue. You know, I thought it was a rock band with long hair and they dressed up like ladies.
No, I mean, you didn't.
But you know, so I lost a lot of money very quickly because I didn't know what it was. But it was a stock that was also manipulated by the mob, a whole other conversation. But in here, you have to understand what the stuff is. And so I've made a point that if I'm going to invest in a company, I want to know what that company does. Ford, all right, got that one. I know what that means. But You know, you take a look at some of the names of companies, you look at what they do, and you don't understand it. So you got to know what it is. If you're going to invest inside of a mutual fund, in a conversation we've had recently in my office, you know, somebody says, well, I want to invest inside of XYZ Mutual Fund's Chilean fund. What do they invest in? Chili producers. No, that'd be the country. I mean, you know, so you have to know what's on the inside, and it just makes sense. You can't just pick a name and say this is the best rate of return. I want to invest inside of it. Matter of fact, one of them just popped up, folks. And there's some funds that are out there. I'm not going to give the fund names, but they use options to leverage the marketplace. So if we take a look at the S&P 500 last year, up some 32%. We look at the S&P 500. There are mutual funds that leverage that using options, contracts, and futures. And so now it doubles to 64%. And so guess what somebody says? Well, geez, I got some of these funds over here that only made 6% last year. Yep, they were supposed to make 6%. Why? It's so that it doesn't go crazy when the market goes down. That's why they only make 6%. They're called, you know, safe funds or safer funds, let's say. He goes, yep, I saw in a paper these funds over here made like 64%. They're twice the market. Can I get some of those? And the answer is, no, you can't. We bring the stapler out, start putting a hand it out, you know. No, you can't. Why? Because if I put you inside of those, they can also go down 64%. Really? Oh, you know, here we start again. Yeah. That's the reason you have stuff that has 6% in it, because you don't understand the other part. So we have to know what it is. And there's some of these funds, and we go in there, and I'm so fearful, and I know what happens every day. People go in and they buy those types of funds. They buy them not knowing what they are, knowing that they're levered, and that's why they're 64% up. It's not because of any astute investing. But they're also levered that if the stock market goes down 30%, they're going to come down 60% as well. So that leveraging on the inside. But you have to understand what you're investing. If you don't know, read about it. Be a self-learner inside of this. Listen to the articles that we give, for example, in this program. Hey, here's an article here that's a great idea. You can go back, if you're not familiar with it, go back to the WSAU website and go in and take a look at the podcast. You can re-listen to the program. What article was that they were talking about? It's out there. You have to be a learner when you invest, no matter what it is. We have some young people that are coming into our office, and they want to start investing. And they've done a little bit of investing through the 401k and that whole bit, and we're going to help out with it. He said, we want to start investing inside of some options. And I said, oh, hold it. Have you ever done options before? No, but I got a newsletter. No. And I said, all right, first of all, I will not buy options for you unless you're going to do what's called a covered call. Do you know what that is? No, but the option, this newsletter tells me what to buy and how much. I said, how many other people are buying a newsletter and are doing the same thing? So that's going to, you know, take out any sort of a spread or any sort of advantage you might have. You know, so that's going to fall apart. I said, the best thing to do if you're going to play with options is to do it on paper first. Do the research of the options that you may want to buy. And with that, you know, start doing it from that side and see if you find any arbitrage. And, well, it's arbitrage. Well, it's not a big bird that flies around the ocean. That's an arbitrage. But an arbitrage can make you look like an, well, nonetheless. Arbitrage is when you see some sort of a weird thing between the price of the stock and the price of the option. And maybe there's some sort of an extra price or profit you can get in there. But you got to do that research and that work on your own. So I said, if you can do the options, play it on paper first. He says, well, okay, we're going to sell a house. And we're going to buy a whole bunch of stock with the house. Can we do that? Yep, you can. But you have to make sure it's diversified, and you have to make sure you research and look at the companies and the stock and that a little bit. So it goes back again to saying, you know what it is that you're buying and how you're doing it. So we had some conversations. We're going to do some stuff to help them out. And we'll, my guesstimation, we'll do some joint ventures. We'll help them. Show them how to do stock stuff. We'll take some stuff. We'll make it so it's more serious things that we make sure they're going to be okay for the long term. And give them some education along the way. And I think there'll be some great investors on their own one day with a little bit of education.
715-845-2155 if you have a question from Earl. There was another article you wanted to touch on.
Well, I don't remember what it was. Was it the one
tapping your IRA early? Was that the one you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. Yeah, that one.
I think that's the one.
Folks, we don't just talk and tell jokes at breaks. We actually forward think this program to a certain
Once point. In a while,
yeah. That's right. Folks, there's a thing that I've talked about for a long time in here and have a discussion with clients, and that is we have all this money sitting inside of IRAs. We have money sitting outside of IRAs. You may or may not have a pension and Social Security income from various sources. Which one do you take the money out first always becomes the question. Well, there's a few things that we do know, and that is that at 70 and a half, you have to start taking money out of your IRA. Conversation literally this past week. How much do I have to start taking out of my IRAs because I have that 70 and a half thing, which is, I think that's the real term, not RMD or required minimum distributions. It's the 70 and a half thing. So how much do I need to take out? I said, well, guesstimation is going to be somewhere around $11,000 to $12,000. Well, do I have to pay taxes on that? Uh-huh, you do. What if I don't? then it's 50%, and you still have to pay the 50% penalty, and you still have to pay the tax. Well, that's not very fair. Well, keep voting the way you do. But nonetheless, that's just a side note. But nonetheless, they still have to pay the taxes, and they still have to pull the money out of it. And he said, well, geez, that's going to change all my taxes. I'm going to have to start paying taxes on Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, yep. How do I get around it? You don't. Can I put it in the IRA, a Roth IRA? Well, kind of. So we went through that discussion. Is there any way to get out of the tax? Nope. If I could do that, I'd have a drive-through window with the office. I mean, you go through all this sort of stuff. And so the reality sets in, they're going to have to pay taxes on this. But what happens now is on theirs, they'll have to take out almost about $12,000. So if the market continues growing, it'll be a little bit more. But what happens if you're in a high six figures? You know, all of a sudden the amount of money you have to start taking at age 7.5 screws up all your taxes all over the place. And it's now money that you may or may not use. And if you haven't used it for a period of years, you may not use the distribution that's coming out of there. What do you do with it to help start causing some issues? So to have it stop causing issues. So in many instances, what I'll recommend is if people have money outside of IRAs, is to leave that money there. Just let that sit and continue to grow. If you're not going to use that money, use the IRAs for income instead. Now, there's always a big debate that happens in here with my accounting friends, because my accounting and CPA friends say, well, if you want to lower taxes, leave the money inside of the IRAs and take the money from your other distributions, because capital gains is a cheaper tax rate than ordinary income from the IRA. I love you, CPA fellas. I just love picking on that voice, by the way.
Yeah.
But here's the rest of the story. Is that if we take a look at the long term on this, and we do proper estate planning with our attorney fellas, or our ladies, but we get that sort of stuff finished up and done, and we can do a thing called a marital property agreement we talked about before. So this money that's outside of qualified dollars, meaning primarily your IRAs or 403Bs or 457 plans by the time you retire, that money on the outside, or what's called non-qualified money, when one of you, either husband or wife, passes away, or if you're single by yourself, when you pass away, all the taxes on it are going to step up, or the bases are going to step up to the value on date of death. And what happens at that point in time is you just made all the capital gains tax disappear. And so if you've done well and you've saved over the course of the years and stock is, you know, your portfolio value is low and it went up and my wife passes away. When she passes away, I get to now step up basis. I don't have to pay any taxes. So if I need any of that money, I don't have to pay any income tax on if I need it for expenses, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd rather let that occur because that's something I can control. I don't have to take any money out of that account.
That in the same year as death?
On the date of death, yes. It immediately steps up.
For the 1 year period only, and then taxes will come back on that later on?
No. What happens, and let me give you an example of that, is let's say you have a $100,000 portfolio, and you and your lovely bride do a great job over the years, and it's now $1 million, and you're going to pass away first. And, folks, we're going to know when Tom passes away because, as he said, his head will hit the microphone on the way down to the keyboard.
Right.
So it goes from $100,000 to $1 million. So you have a $900,000, for simplicity's sake, a $900,000 taxable event right there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start to keep drawing that money out, well, you know, you're going to be paying taxes on it. But if you're not going to use it, you have a marital property agreement part of your estate plan for Wisconsin. When you hit that $900,000, that $1 million mark, as soon as you would pass away, your lovely bride would get the $1 million. That whole $900,000 taxable event disappears. It's gone. But you got to have the marital property agreement, and this is why you have to bring the attorneys into your life too in this. So now
you have to take it all out at that point.
No, you can leave it right there. But what happens is the taxable event just disappears. Stay inside the same investments, there's just no taxes left anymore. They're gone because we get a step up in basis from the $100,000 that we originally bought. The basis is now called the $1 million. So from that, then, I'd rather draw income from the IRAs because no matter what, I have to pay taxes on the IRA. And at 70.5, I have to start taking it out no matter what. So my thought would be, and which tends to prove out pretty well in numbers, is start taking it out at, you know, when you retire at 60 or 62 or 65, start having some distributions come out from that and have that be your monthly income or annual income. Why? Because then at 70.5, that required minimum distribution is going to be less, and we continue to leave that and leave that money outside of the IRAs continue to grow. And then upon the second of you to pass away, or if it's just you at this point in time when you pass away, it steps up in basis once again, Tom, and then goes off to your kids without any income tax to your estate as well. So there's a big benefit to that, having our income come from the IRAs ahead of time.
All right, 715-845-2155. I know everybody's trying to stay warm this morning, but if you're in the house having another cup of coffee, give us a call here if you have a financial question for Merle. No question too big or too small for Merle to take a bite out of. We'll be back after this on WSAU.
tonight. Be part of the one event that unites the world. The Olympic Winter Games on NBC. Follow the stories of sacrifice.
This is for the gold. Can he do it?
Yeah!
Experience history in the making.
Unbelievable!
Okay. Destroyed the old record.
See the world's best.
She's done it, and he's got another gold medal.
And see the world at its best. The Sochi Olympic Winter Games. Only on NBC.
Psst. It's me, your bathroom medicine cabinet. I see you naked, know how often you floss, and watch you pluck unsightly hairs. I can keep a secret, but you need to know. Your kids have been taking your prescriptions to get high. I couldn't keep it quiet, because prescription drug abuse now causes more deaths than cocaine and heroin ODs combined. So please, mind your meds. For tips on safeguarding your meds and your family, visit the partnership at drugfree.org.
Getting your child home safely.
Tap your heels together 3 times.
Is just a click away.
There's no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
It doesn't take much. But life can change in an instant. So we keep you updated with the latest information every morning to help you face the day.
We urge the residents of this city to monitor the weather reports.
Today I'm declaring a drought emergency.
Because when the world changes,
the shooter, we got him in custody.
You want to be right there along with it. On WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we are here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch and Associates in Wausau. Still have a few minutes left. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call here this morning. You wanted to continue touching on taxes and IRAs here for a little bit.
Yeah, we're still chatting. We're still chatting about the article talking about. I'm trying to pop the article up in front of me here, and it's not really working.
Tapping your IRA early could pay off.
Tapping your IRA early. There's another benefit that tends to pop out of that that I want to chat about, and that is doing some estate planning work with it. There's this really nasty thing that happens inside of estate planning work with inheritance taxes. They actually call it the federal exclusion tax, but it's essentially your federal and state estate taxes or inheritance taxes, the term is. And that is when you die, they still get the money. Now, for a long time, it was $625,000. We could give $625,000 onto our beneficiaries, no federal or state inheritance taxes. And then throughout the course of the Bush years, it bounced around all over the place to the point that it went up and then came back down. In 2010, there was none. So you could have an unlimited amount of money, and you could give it all to your federal or to your family with no federal or state taxes, though it had some excises that went on to it. You still paid some tax, but not much. Now, that's the reason that George Steinbrenner opted to pass away in 2010. He wanted to make sure nobody got any money. No, that's really not true. It just happened that way. So it was reinstated back in 2011 that we had an estate tax again, but it was at $5 million and is having some adjustments right now. So for 2014, it's going to be actually $5.34 million. They're putting some inflation adjustments in there. Now, I don't believe that number, and the reason I don't believe that number is because it's easier to tax people that pass away. They complain less, and so that inheritance number is adjusted quite a bit, and I think it's going to come back down again. Do I like it at $5 million? Do I think it's a great idea? Yes, but I think the probability it's going to come back down. Now, here's the problem with that. So where does it settle out? And discussions happen between me and colleagues on a regular basis. Do we think it's going to settle out $1 million or $1.5 million? That probably seems about right, that eventually that'll be the case. But what happens with this is this now. Let's say you have a person that's saved and they have some money sitting inside of IRAs, and they've been taking the money on the non-IRA dollars first, and they've been taking that dollar amount out. And so when they retire, between husband and wife, the 401ks are $500,000 at 59.5, let's say 60, making it easy. So with it, it's easy, even at a conservative rate, to have that $500,000 double to be $1 million by age 70 then, where you have to start taking minimum dollars amount, and that still is not going to do anything to make it disappear. And that could almost easily then double again by age 80. So our original $500,000 at 50 is now about $2 million. Following me with on the math on this, Tom? So this is not including what they have in house and assets and cars and clothes and, you know, heirlooms and the money that's not inside of IRAs, and now a person passes away. Well, guess how much tax is due on the $2 million of IRAs? All of it, and what is it going to do to the estate tax rate at or income rate at that year? It's going to make it $2 million, which is going to do what to the tax rate? Jump it to the maximum, which now is, what, 39% federal and plus the state on top of that. So how much is gone? About half. So that's about $1 million gift that goes away. So now we have the estate taxes that go on top of it, which counts for the $2 million plus whatever else they have. And if the estate inheritance tax rate is at $1 million, that means 47% of anything over $1 million is gone. So for all effective purposes, the $2 million worth of IRA is gone. Where did it go? It just went to not only income taxes, but also went to inheritance taxes, you know, expenses, et cetera, et cetera. So now the estate that mom and dad thought might go to the kids is gone. So if we have the ability to continue to keep paring back in the IRA and spending that money along the way, hopefully I've at least had it so it didn't appreciate as much, but the other half outside of the IRA had the ability to grow, and with marital property agreements and proper estate planning, that goes off to the kids and has a considerable less of an impact on a tax standpoint. And by the way, if you're in that case, it's a really good idea to start doing some estate planning to create some separate trusts on the other side to help cover the cost of those taxes. There's some other things that if you have those problems, you don't do them in your office, we're going to staple your hand to the desk.
All right, well, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Anything else you wanted to touch on quickly here before we finish up?
You know, the thing I want to talk about is this tax time. Capital gains taxes are out there, folks, and we talk about this every year, but this is the time of the year you look at it because now you're starting to get your statements. Clients are coming and going, my goodness, look, I have to pay capital gains tax and long-term capital gains on my mutual funds. I said, yep, you do. They said, oh, my God, this is terrible. I said, you imagine what it would be like if we didn't have inside of tax-efficient funds. It would be three times that. So what you have to look at is when you're getting ready for your tax preparations, folks, take a look at your statements that you're getting from your brokerage houses, your mutual fund houses. Now, inside of IRAs, this doesn't matter, by the way. This is money not inside of IRAs, either Roth or traditional and so forth. But on the outside, look at the capital gains distribution you're getting on there. If it seems like a large dollar amount, go contact your financial advisor and say, is there anything we can do to help make this lower? Remember, inside of mutual funds, we can elect to pay a lot of tax or elect not to pay a lot of tax. It's our choice. There's inside of mutual funds is a thing called turnover, and this is our easiest measure. Excuse me. Inside of a mutual fund, if a mutual fund is worth $100 million, I didn't say your account, but in total, which, by the way, would be a real small one, but if we had our money in there and a portfolio manager bought and sold $70 million of that 100 throughout the course of the year, it would be said to have a 70% turnover. Well, you want to have mutual funds that have turnover that are more in that 25% range. Why? Does it impede the rate of return? No. You can find that rates of returns are about the same as if you had one with 70% turnover. The difference is you pay about a third in tax as a result of owning it. So this year, if you're having high capital gains, contact your financial advisor. Chat with your accountant about it and see if there are mutual funds that have similar quality, similar rates of returns, similar expenses and fees, but have less turnover. The thing it's going to do is we're starting to come into an expansive marketplace, from my lips to God's ears. We're going to pay more taxes as we continue to go, and if we can pay as least amount of tax possible and hit the same amount of gain, it's always to our benefit. A little bit of tax tip planning.
All right, well, we're out of time for today. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
Folks, I will be here in lovely Wausau, Wisconsin, basking in the sun. It's going to be cold but sunny. Stop and visit with us, 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street. Stop and have a cup of coffee and catch us in the middle. Give us a call, 715-849-3600 locally or outside the Wausau area at 866-355-5100. Or find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right, we'll talk to you again next week.
See you then. It's
Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates here in Wausau. We've got the news on the way. The polka shows are coming up as well. All right here on WSAU.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. The first five medals have been or will be awarded, gold medals that is, at the Winter Olympics today, live in Sochi, Russia. Fox News Radio's Jessica Gallagher with some early results.
Chris, it's been less than 24 hours since Russia's over-the-top and full-of-character opening ceremonies, and the U.S. has already won its first gold. Sage Kostenberg stole the gold in the men's snowboarding slopestyle final. Norway is leading the medal count with two, followed by the U.S. with one. Meanwhile, in the 15-kilometer skiathlon, Norwegian Marit Bjørgen earned the gold, making it a career fourth for her. Sweden's Charlotte Kalla took the silver, and Norway's Heidi Wang got the bronze, Chris.
Jessica Gallagher in Sochi, Russia. Thanks. Winter's got a firm grip on a lot of the country.
What's that line about our winter of discontent? It certainly holds true for much of the lower 48 this season. In Pennsylvania and Maryland, utility crews from as far away as